Welcome to the OA 50th birthday. Workshop number 3. My name is Nathan. I'm a compulsive overeater and your leader for this workshop.
I'm Nathan.
Well, those who wish, please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That will not be done. All right, housekeeping. Please silence your cell phone if you have not already done so. As you can see, we have lots of guide box materials. Please don't play with them yet. As it is circulating, please ask lots of questions. In this workshop, everyone will write for 15 minutes. I and our panelists will share on the topic. We'll have a Q&A, and finally, we'll all make a God box or an HP box. We'll end at 11, so we'll have a break before the closing speaker. May I have a volunteer to read an excerpt from How It Works from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous?
Hi, I'm Lane. I'm a compulsive overeater. Please do not change wording. Okay. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Our actor is self-centered, egocentric as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, our own self-pity? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt.
Now we all write for 15 minutes by answering these 3 questions. What would I like to surrender right now about work? What would I like to surrender right now about work? And then, what would I like to surrender right now about relationships? And then what would I like to surrender right now about anything? Of course, you may write about anything you like if these questions don't resonate. And we will write till 9:25. All right, time's up. I will now share on the topic for 5 minutes. I only have about, 45 seconds of material, but, trying to read my writing will take about 10. All right. What I would like to surrender about work. Well, Nathan, compulsive overreader. I'm unemployed at the moment. I worked as a chef for a number of years, and being a compulsive overeater, that doesn't really work out too well. I'm still early in my recovery. I just celebrated a year, and thank you. For today, I don't really feel comfortable working as a chef, so I'm in the process of changing industries, and I'd like to surrender the fear that comes along with, a new type of work and relationships. Fun times. Talking about this with a group of women. I haven't been in a meaningful relationship for a number of years, mainly because of fear and fear of rejection, and just not really thinking that I was worth it. I'm sure no one else has felt that way. It's different for me, I swear. Working this program, I'd like to surrender that idea that, surrender the fear of rejection and surrender the idea that I'm not worth it. All right. And what would I like to surrender about anything? One of the gifts I received from working this program is 115-pound weight loss. Yeah. And
Nathan, how old are you?
I'm 27. Yeah. Thank you. My top weight was 360 pounds, so I took the accelerated program to get here. I'm well aware that the weight loss is a gift of this program, and I didn't do this on my own. But the problem is the ego gets in the way. And I get this crazy idea every once in a while that I have this under control, and that, I can run the show again. And like I said, running the show got me to 360 pounds. And so I'd like to surrender the idea that I'm in control and that I can run the show. Because when I run the show, it gets bad reviews. Thank you. All right, help me welcome our first panelist, Colleen. We'll share for 15 minutes on the topic, including if and how you work with the God Box.
Morning, everyone. My name is Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Colleen.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be here this morning. Just to kind of get the numbers out of the way, I've been abstinent 7.5 years. My top weight when I came in these rooms was 307 pounds, so maintaining 160-pound weight loss as a result of this program. And God is my favorite topic. just to give you a little bit of a background, I didn't come in here with any, no experience of God. I actually came in with lots of experience with God, which is sometimes more hindering than it can be beneficial. I grew up in a religious tradition that I still practice today. I actually practice it with a lot more fervor and a lot more sincerity than I ever did. But when I came in, I was pretty burnt out on God, because as far as I could tell, he'd really let me down. I felt the number of times that I've been dropped from my behind and left to sort of my own devices. And one of the things that I remember not very long into program that came to me, because I had a number of times where I was literally on my knees crying and praying, saying, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what's going on. And I don't even mean about food. I just mean about life. Like, I was miserable. I was in so much pain. And I didn't know how, and I didn't know what to do. And I remember just being like, God, please help me. Like, I don't know what to do. And I remember actually probably about 3 or 4 years before I came into these rooms, I was having one of those moments. I was probably in one of the worst years of my life, you know, one of those everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I had actually gone out to do a service to work as an inner city teacher. And I had the worst class of kids. I had terrible roommates. I was so far from my family. It was like everything was terrible. And I had done this because I felt God was calling me to. So talk about really being, you know, PO'd, that I had been following what I thought was God's will and I'd been dropped on my behind. That's a very nice expression. That's not usually how I talk when I talk to God. I'm very straightforward. I've always been known to be like, you know, listen, this really sucks right now. And anytime you want to clue me in because you got that whole big picture thing happening, then I don't. I'm good. I'm open. You know? And for me, that's always been very essential, to have a very upfront, honest relationship with God. Because, you know, even if I'm angry with God, at least I'm still talking to him. And I use him, but it could be her, it could be it, whatever. You know, for me, that's just sort of how I connect. So I remember very, very clearly when I was in that desperate place. And I was in D.C., and I was even part of a faith-based organization, so it's not like, oh, yeah, I mean, like, everything was there, and I was pissed. And I remember saying very clearly, listen, God, obviously there must be something that's keeping me from you that I don't see. Because I'm doing everything I think I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to church every week, I'm praying, I'm talking to you, all this stuff, and nothing is happening, and I'm continuing to be miserable. So just show me what it is that I'm doing. And I would say probably about a year into program when it all of a sudden dawned on me. God couldn't get through. I was using the food. I was so busy doing my will of like, well, this is going to fix it, because it always did, you know. And of course, my eating went, I think before I went out there, I'd done some sort of like health thing or something, and I was probably eating healthier. But, you know, sure, within a short amount of time, it was back to the Reese's peanut butter cups and the cookie dough and everything else, you know, because that was my fix-it. But what I got was is that while I was busy putting the food in my system, there was no room for God, you know. And so I had to first put the food aside to make room for God. Because God is not imposing in my experience. God is very gentle and very kind of like, you know, a little tap on your shoulder sort of thing. And he doesn't go where he's not invited. And so the more I put the food in, the more I was like, just, I got it, really, I'm good. I can handle this, you know? And so what occurs to me now is that I was willing and I was open to the idea that maybe perhaps there was something that I didn't know. And as I've worked in program and as I've lived these steps, I continually find that that is where the biggest surrender is for me. Is that little willingness to think that maybe I don't know what the best way is, or maybe I don't know how it's going to turn out, and maybe, just maybe, it's better than I ever imagined. You know, I don't have it in front of me, but I remember the first time I read Step 3 in the AA 12 and 12, my sponsor was taking me through that step, and there's a question in there. It says something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing terribly, but like, imagine, or it was something like, what would happen if I were to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him? And I actually wrote in the column, a life I never would have imagined. Like, that was my first response. And that's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. You know, my life is so much better. Not just because I don't weigh over 300 pounds. I mean, that's definitely a really nice thing. It's a terrible and very painful way to walk through life. But because I'm much more genuine and I'm much more authentic and I'm much more who I'm supposed to be, I'm not busy trying to be what other people want me to be. You know, like that was the way I coded my nerves, because I couldn't do it the way you wanted me to. I couldn't do it to make you happy. I couldn't, you know. And that was the way that I took care of myself. And I took care of myself that way because I needed something really early on to sort of take care of those things that some people around me weren't doing or whatever. And, it doesn't really matter. The point is that I'm not that little kid anymore. So whenever I get stuck in that place and thinking I need the food to fix it, it's because I'm going reverting back to that, like, it's the only tool that I have. And you all taught me that I have at least 8, and then I have 12 steps and 12 traditions. And so for me, the way that my day begins is one of the first thoughts I try and have, and I can't control the one that sometimes when I wake up and go, ooh, you know. Thankfully today, most of the time it's followed by, woo-hoo. But the first conscious thought that I form is, thank you, God, for this day, for this opportunity to live abstinent and be of service. Because I'm really, really clear that my abstinence is what keeps me connected to my higher power. My abstinence is what keeps me open to the idea that something different could happen. It keeps me open to that I don't have the answer to everything. And it's okay. You know, like, I'm actually, you know, it's funny, I was a school teacher for many, many years. And as a school teacher, you become really well versed in knowing all the answers. Another thing that can be somewhat detrimental. And what I've learned in program is how to be like, you know what, I don't know. I don't know. And it's okay, I don't have to know. In fact, sometimes it's better when I don't know, because it usually turns out much better. And it was funny because one thing, before I forget, I'm going to mention, and this is in the big book on page 58. Most of us are familiar that rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. As you go a little bit further down the page, there's a quote from the big book that says, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And that is something I firmly, firmly believe. Because for me, it's not about letting go of the weight or the food anymore. It's about letting go of those old, fixed, and fettered ideas. And it also talks about earlier in the big book that we have lots of those, you know. And so for me, that's where the surrender comes in today, that just maybe I can let go that it's going to turn out this way. Because you know what? I never thought I could live at a healthy body weight. I was fat all my life. I didn't know that that was possible. I had no idea what that looked like. So if I were to hold on to some old idea, I'd probably be 400 pounds by now because I just thought that was my lot in life. And so as I work and as I surrender things, it's always those old ideas because it's really my thinking that's messed up. The food was just what I, you know, if you live inside negativity, God, you need something to coat your nerves. Because I've listened to my head sometimes sort of as an observer. Drill sergeants have nothing on this sucker, let me tell you. I mean, it's nasty. You know? And it's like, that's why I need God to like open up and be like, whoa, chill, child, it's not that bad. You know? Like my sponsees probably get sick of this, but I'm always saying, you know, really, nobody died. Like, in the grand scheme of things. Now, I can't use that phrase with my sister because she's an emergency medicine physician and people die all the time. I made the mistake once during that was not good. She was like, well, no, actually somebody did die. And I was like, oh, right. But anyways, my point is that, like, in the grand scheme of things that I always find so overwhelming and so, like, I don't think I can handle this, it's like, really, it's not that bad, you know? I only think, again, think, there's the problem, I only think it's going to kill me, you know? So again, if I'm just open to the possibility that maybe it's not going to be as bad as I think, because I got all these worst cases, I'm telling you, like I have a whole soap opera that lives inside my head. And it's so dramatic and it's so overwhelming and so depressing and I don't need to watch soap operas anymore because, you know, really, I got a whole script going. And it never turns out that way. You know? And even if something happens that is bad or doesn't feel right or whatever, it's like not as devastating, thank you, as I think it's going to be. So one of the things that I learned in this program is a prayer. Probably I was about a year abstinent that I use all the time. And it is, God, remove from me my will and place in me your will. Give me the power and the courage to carry it out. And the woman who said it said to me, because you're asking for your will to be removed and God to replace that, but you're not just sort of sitting there waiting for something to happen. You know, because I ask for the power and the courage, which means that I take the action. And it was interesting because I have a God box, and I, I hadn't looked through it in a long time, so I pulled it out yesterday because I thought, well, it'll be appropriate. And I went through it, and it was so interesting, like reading all these things that I'd put in the God box. And I put little stuff like, should I stay at a hotel when I go here? You know, I mean, like, should I buy these shoes? You know, like all kinds of little stuff. But I also had big things in there, things about relationships, things about job. In this program, I've been in and out of relationships, been in and out of jobs, been unemployed, I've been employed, I've switched careers, I've done all kinds of things that I never thought possible. And my relationships with my families have shifted, and my relationship with myself, because I actually found something in there, something I must have gotten from some sort of 12-step thing I went to, which was something about self-acceptance. And as I went through the box, I pulled out the things that had sort of been resolved, and that was one of them, which I thought was really cool. But what I got more than anything, because a number of the circumstances, especially the ones with the exes and stuff like that, didn't turn out the way I would have wanted them to. But you know what? When I was reading them, I realized that I have complete peace about it. Like, I'm not looking at any of those going, darn, I really wish I was still with one of those guys. You know? And I was like, oh, so that must mean that God's will was done because I'm at peace with it. You know? And again, it's not the way I would have planned it. But, you know, I kind of like God's plans better. The more experience I have with God's plans, the better I like those. And what I noticed is sometimes what I would do is actually make sort of list of things and throw them in there. And I came across something that was really, really touching to me yesterday. It was a laundry list of a number of things. And on there was something I never remember writing, which was about my relationship with my mother. And in this last year, I've had a profound change in my relationship with my mother. Oh my goodness, I cannot even tell you. I do all kinds of spiritual stuff, go on retreats, seminars, all kinds of things. And I went on this one last year and didn't have any intention or thing about my mom or whatever. Growing up, by the way, I hated my mother. I thought I was never good enough, nothing made her happy, you know. And I just, like, I would fight her all the time. And a lot of my eating was like my way of saying F you know, like it was really hurting her. Well, it was because, you know, it didn't make the family look good that there was this fat child in the family. But I was really hurting myself. And I spent a lot of time and a lot of energy being very sarcastic about my mother. I remember even as a kid when I'd be with my friends and I'd talk about my mom and I'd imitate her. And I remember even thinking, why do I do that? Like, I didn't know why. I just sort of did. And in my experience, I actually had an open conversation with her. And I said to her, you know, Mom, I said, I don't remember how I started, but, and she said to me, you know what, Colleen, she said, but you were my gift. She's like, and I said, you know what, Mom, I never felt that way. What I felt was that what I did was never good enough, and that it wasn't okay, and you weren't happy with me, and she said, you know what, she said, I'm really hard on myself. And a lot of times what I do is not good enough for me. She said, so maybe I passed some of that on, and I'm really sorry. When I talk about my mother today, I smile. I'm not sarcastic. I enjoy spending time with her. I'm not her best friend. I mean, we talk every couple weeks. She lives in another state. But there is such a peace and an ease and a love and acceptance that was never there. And it wasn't something that I ever really intended to do. You know, but when I opened it up yesterday and I saw it on that list, I was like, oh my God. It's like there was something intuitive in me that knew that there needs to be that healing. And I'm so grateful. And I'm grateful in a large way because it allows me, as I do sort of my own sort of, you know, what I learned how to do in this program is to be my own nurturing parent. And when I come up against those things where I'm really harsh on myself, I don't have anything attached to her anymore. So, thank you for letting me share.
All right, help me welcome our second panelist, Gretchen, who will share for 15 minutes on the topic.
Hi, my name is Gretchen, compulsive overeater.
And,
thank you, Colleen. I just heard a lot of good things, and I was when I got the topic from Zan, I just saw the email, and then I went back to it a couple days ago, and I thought, oh my God, I love the topic of surrender. Because for me, surrender, the lack of kept me coming to meetings but not able to abstain, and the surrender allowed me to start working a program of recovery. And it's such, to me, it's the beginning of the program. It was for me, and this is my experience. It doesn't mean it's happened for everybody this way, but it's not even the act of surrender, but I think it is an action, but I don't think it's anything that I made a conscious decision to do. I think by coming to meetings and continuing to do the work that was suggested, it just happened for me. And in another program I'm in, I thought, you know what, it's harder in this program because there's a definite, you're in recovery, this is my opinion, you're in recovery if you're abstaining, and you're, you know, it's not as good a recovery if you're not abstaining. And part of the way I show my surrender or the display of surrender is the behavior. For me, calling my sponsor every morning or whatever time of the day is an action that shows somewhere in me I've made some kind of surrender. It's, I can't do it on my own. I'm going to reach out and ask for help. Going to a meeting is also, for me, shows my level of surrender, how involved I am with the program. So there are, for me, some kind of behaviors that do show or can display a surrender. And it took me, I have 28 years of abstinence, and for me that's 3 meals a day with nothing in between. And I came to meetings, I think it was about 4 years, eating, unable to surrender, but I kept coming to meetings. And I remember the exact, it's very vivid to me because I got down to 125, I came out at 170, and I lost all my weight because I was going to meetings, I was doing all the stuff, but I still had not surrendered. And I was eating maybe once a week. I would binge on a Friday night, then get back up and do it, start again on Saturday. And I was in a size 6. I had never been in a size 6. And it got to the point where I thought, I'm either going to get what these people are doing or I have to leave. Because it was too painful to be that thin and not have some program of recovery. And I remember thinking, I don't get what they're doing, because it made no sense to me. And I went, what happened for me is I was at the gathering in Santa Barbara, and I had gone through my first 3 steps many, many times, and one more time I was taking it, and the woman said to me, she said, you have to find a power greater than yourself. And I said, I don't understand the concept, I don't get what you're talking about. And I had grown up in the Catholic Church, and went to Catholic school, the whole thing. And she says, well, how about this? How about you, can you believe what I believe? I mean, can you believe in my higher power? And she had lost over 100 pounds, so I knew she had something I didn't have. And I said, oh, absolutely. She said, why don't you make your higher power my belief in the higher power? I said, great, I can do that. And that was the start. I think that was when I surrendered. She also said to me, your mother is your higher power, and until you find someone, some non-human, she says, you're not ever going to find any recovery. And I got that. I had no idea my mother was my higher power. But when she said that, I got it, and I believed her. And so that was the start for me. And what I found today is that the process of surrender, I feel like I'm great. But this is my experience, and to me, it's just come to me in the last year, and it's so powerful because the process of surrender is the same, whether it's your food, whether it's a house you're buying, whether it's a job, it doesn't matter. The process is the same. And when I was reading, I took out the OA book this morning, reading it, because I thought, yeah, I better get something going on for this. And it says, how do I reach this decision to turn my will and life over to a higher power? What exactly do I have to do? It helps to understand that once we make this decision, our approach to all choices will be like our approach to our food and eating choices. We will no longer simply do what we feel like doing or what we think we can get away with. And I thought, oh, yeah, get away with, that's me. What can I get away with in this situation? Anyway, and you know what? I probably still do it. I just don't do it at the level I used to do it. So, but the surrender is the most powerful thing. And you know, the honesty. And even today, if I have a big situation, like I've been at my job 25 years, and I have the opportunity maybe in about 8 months to take another job. And I am so grateful that I have this program because I know in 8 months I'll have an answer. I don't have an answer today. And that's part of the deal is that I can say, you know what, today I don't know. I don't know, and I don't have to make a decision today. And it's just like what I found with real estate. If I go towards buying a property, either the doors will continue to open or the doors will continue to shut. It's just like a relationship. Either they'll continue to open or they'll continue to shut. And sometimes that shutting down process, property is easy. I mean, it shuts down quick in a couple months, you know. But relationships, not so easy. So, and that's my struggle. And I thought, you know, with relationships, when I was doing my writing this morning, I'm listening to words and what I need to listen to and what I need to do in relationships. Just like my behavior of surrender, I need to watch the behavior. And if the behavior is not supporting what the mouth is saying, the behavior carries more weight to me now than the mouth. And that was a big, just now writing, that's what that I got from that. And I thought that's huge because my behavior shows if I'm surrendered or if I'm engaged or, and so I need to use that criteria with other people, especially in a relationship that the doors for me are shutting and I'm fighting it, you know. But I know I'll get there. I'll know I'll end up in a surrender. I'm almost positive I know what the answer is. It's a big fat no. But, you know, today I don't know that 100% and I let myself live with the indecision and I let myself live with the uncertainty of it because I don't know. And I know that God, and for me today, God is the power of the ocean is greater than me, the power of the wind, and that's what is my higher power. And anyway, I'm just so grateful because if I didn't have this program, I mean, I would just be a big blob bumbling through life. And you know what? I feel today, I hurt, I have joy. I mean, life is not easy, but I have a way, and I have, you know, I mean, it's just such a gift. The program has given me a gift of living life. And, you know, my sponsor walked in this morning, and it just brought tears to my eyes because I thought, you know what, I don't even know if my mother would have came. And to have one person in the room come, and I don't even know if I'm going to believe she came for me. But anyway, and not the topic or that she wanted a God box. But anyway, I was just so grateful, and it just brought love to my heart, and I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm really proud to be a compulsive overeater because that's the only thing that would have got me to God or to a power greater than myself. I mean, I think everybody has their own deal. Mine just happens to be compulsive overeating, and today I'm grateful, and I've been grateful for that, for the disease for a long time. So, but for me, the start of it was the surrender with the food. And I didn't even know that I didn't believe I was powerless over it. It took me a long time. And that was another thing is that I got honest and I said, no, you know what? I still believe I can manage this. And until I got honest with myself, I think even more than another person and then another person, that I could control this, that if I just had the right diet, whatever. Even coming here, I was not going to buy, I was not going to surrender that food had more power than myself. And I think that plus the higher power, it all works together. But anyway, I'm so grateful and keep coming back. Thank you.
All right, help me welcome our final panelist, Barbara O., who will share for 15 minutes on the topic, including if and how you work with the God Box.
Hi, everybody. I'm Barbara. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I don't work with a God box. You got to know that right away. This is like an amazing topic. And you know what came to me was, I do have a God box, but I don't use it. I opened the big book, and step three is what I really focus on in my life. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt, for lead me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that the victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And for those of you that, I've been around the program a long time. I came here in 1975. I weighed 180 pounds. That wasn't my top weight. It was 189. And the weight was just a manifestation of the incredible dark cave and misery that I lived in on a moment-to-moment, microsecond basis. And this program has given me a life far beyond my wildest dreams. In the last 2 years, my life changed, 2.5 years, changed dramatically. I got married at the age of 57. Woo! Someone said, why would you do that? I was speaking at a meeting in Brentwood. When I was just engaged, and a woman raised her hand, it was like a workshop kind of format, and she said, why would you do such a thing? And she was about my age, and I said, because it's the last frontier. It's like, I haven't done it, and I found the right person to marry. Although I had a lot of mixed feelings about that, it's really become very abundantly clear that I married the right guy. And I had so many lessons that I have learned along the way. The other thing that happened about almost 2.5 years ago is that I lost my job where I felt really secure. I was making very, very good money. And they gave me the boot. You're an at-will employee. That was it. Bye-bye. And so 2 months later, I started my own business. And that has also been like an incredible journey that's been fraught with difficulties, challenges, and pain. Because having my own business means I have to have employees, and they're people. And they think differently than I do. And that to me has always been the biggest challenge in my life. And the obstacles in my path are those that I impose upon myself, but they're so much founded on my inability to live life on life's terms. And what does that mean? It means that I have a hard time getting along with other people because I want it my way. Self-centeredness is really like my trademark. I've got like this big, the scarlet letter is, it's all about me, I want it my way. And when I came into this program, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff. This is like, really, the journey keeps changing. And this program is one size fits all, no matter how old you are. I was a lot younger when I got here. And in fact, one of the things I have to surrender is the whole process of aging, because it really sucks. It's really a challenge, just to the acceptance. Acceptance is the key. I look at the principles. When I think of this topic, I think of the principles that are imbued in every one of the steps. And the first one, for me, is acceptance. We admitted we were powerless over food. And that's what I had to accept first and foremost that on a daily basis. Today, I have to accept that I'm powerless over food. Yesterday, I wasn't going to be here. In fact, yesterday, I thought I was supposed to be here yesterday. I'm powerless over my friggin' calendar. I've got a BlackBerry. I have this thing on my desk, you know, all the appointments on the day and during the month. And I also have, like, the old day planner, you know, from the 80s. I've got everything, every tool at my disposal. And I have had this lifelong challenge of figuring out where I'm supposed to be at any given moment, and it's not funny. Really, it sounds funny. It's not funny. I get to my clients and my husband, number one, we work that out. But everything else is sort of like this amorphous, cloudy mess. And I really, it's really surrendering that. It's like, I don't know what to do. I need a lot of help in this department. And my life looks very successful on the outside. And this is like really a challenge and a surrender for me. It's like figuring it out, like slowing down, focusing. So the surrender for me, you know, started with surrendering the food. That's the very beginning, and that was the very beginning in June 1975 when I came to the program, and I didn't think I could stop eating, and indeed I couldn't. It took me 6 months to get the abstinence that I celebrate today. I had my first abstinence was the famous hang in there baby abstinence. You know that Siamese cat that's hanging by its little fingernails? That was me for 4 months, and I couldn't do it. I went to every meeting during the week that there was one, and we didn't have one 7 days a week, not even one. So I went to AA meetings, and nothing. I hung out. I stood like this with the people about 125-pound weight loss. There was one person they knew like that, and I was there. We did fellowship all the time, so I did. That was an opportunity that I took advantage of, and I just wanted like to breathe the same air these people were breathing, and maybe I'd be able to stay abstinent. And after 4 months, I broke my abstinence. After my first 6 weeks, I broke it. And I had my list of reasons, and my surrender, December 1st, 1975, and my birthday is December 2nd, is that no person, place, or thing can get in the way of my abstinence, that I don't eat no matter what. because there will always be a reason to eat. As long as I'm living and breathing, there will always be a reason for me to practice my addiction. And so the only way that I could get to abstinence, no matter what, was to get to abstinence, to make the decision to abstain no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. And for me, it's 3 meals a day and nothing in between, no matter what. And what I put in my meals, the result is here. I weigh what I weigh because of what I put in my three boxes during the day. And the rest of it is like I get to work this program. There's a passage in this in the big book. Here it is. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Well, you know, for me, I got that immediately. I got that I had to get into the program and start working the steps immediately because the cyclone in my life was the relationships that were so unmanageable. And the chaos in the cyclone within my mind, which created the chaos in everything and everyone that I touched. It might not have been visible to everyone, but to me it was always very clear that I needed to surrender on a daily basis. And I really have used every iota and inch of this program from the very beginning, and I do today. And it's really, I find God through many different vehicles. Number one, I found, like someone else shared about this, and for me in the beginning, my higher power was really, I admitted to myself that the ocean, the tides and the sea did not ebb and flow because of me. A power greater than myself. The sun rose and it had nothing to do with me. The natural universe had nothing to do with me. So I got that I wasn't a higher power, and that I needed to find one. But I find it really through other people, and that's where I find my solutions for the things that are the most challenging. And in this relationship area, because I've got all these cards filled out. I'll stand out here, you know, relationships work in miscellaneous items. And in the area of relationships, you know, the biggest thing for me to happen to me is to get married. That's like a really big deal. I mean, I waited that long. And I had a lot of fantasy built up in my head about what this was supposed to be like. And based on stories I heard from everyone in the rooms and my friends, and Hollywood made a major contribution to that. And then also my family that I grew up in. And I make complete, you know, new discoveries almost on a daily basis about the misguided ideas that I developed and I embraced based on my family of origin. And there were no good relationships in that family of origin. I mean, we were all strangers floating around on our little life rafts trying to stay alive, and we didn't talk to each other. There was no discussion. There was no affection between my parents. My mother talked against my father on a daily basis. He was this horrible dragon. And anyway, so I got these ideas, and I didn't even know. I mean, I uncover them and discover them as time goes on, daily, in my knee-jerk reactions to my husband sometimes. It's like, oops. And then I have to make a knee-jerk apology and think about it. And sometimes, you know, this happens not just with my husband, but, you know, in the area of work, which has always been a challenge. When I opened my own firm, wow, what a great idea. One of my buddies at my Sunday morning 7:30 a.m. meeting in Studio City, when I told him that I did this, he said, he actually is a PhD psychologist, too. And he said, good idea for you. Working with other people in corporations doesn't seem to work. He was right. I didn't, you know, I was not offended at all. I mean, it's absolutely the truth. I mean, my last job was almost 7 years in one company, and it was always challenging and difficult. I just don't fit in. And so I'm fitting into my own business, and finding people to fit into that spot with me is really, really challenging. It's really challenging. And so what I find is, again, you know, the old ideas about relationships and work relationships and what that looks like and how do I interact with people and what are their needs, and getting out of my head and sitting and listening to someone and really making an accurate assessment of the people that are around me and getting into acceptance. And where, how can I be of service? Because that's really one of the guiding principles in this program is, how can I be of service? And I have to also take it back to me, because I have a lifelong habit, and some of my friends that have known me 30-plus years know this about me, of burning myself out. And I remember when I met Zan, I was working at the American Heart Association, and there was a picture they took of me, and I was working then. I lived in West L.A. I drove to Pasadena, and I had my own beautiful little office and a secretary. Her comment to me was, out of all the consultants here, you give me more work than anyone. And that's what I did to this poor secretary and to myself as well. And so I burn out, and I'm like in that place again. On Friday night, I was in bed at 6:30 p.m. from exhaustion. And I've been fighting a cold, and I don't have a cold, but I still have, you know, the kind of the hangover from working too hard. And I have a real difficult time surrendering and finding balance in my life, having like this fabulous, wonderful person that makes me laugh on a daily basis called my husband, and having a business that's growing like over 100% last year, and finding now needing another new employee, and where do I fit in? You know, when do I go to the gym, which I've got my schedule with the trainer. I didn't go last week. How do I find time to take a weekend off with my husband or even plan a vacation? Like how do I have balance in my life? And I have to do it on one day at a time. It's working the steps. You know, we admitted we're powerless over food and our lives have become unmanageable, and then see what I can do in that surrender in that moment to find some balance and to give myself an opportunity to sit down and to meditate more than 1 minute. And I have my routines every morning that I do, and I get on my knees if no one's looking. I don't want my husband to see me on my knees. He has to be asleep. I get into the shower. I haven't let go of that one yet. Get into the shower, I say the first three steps. And then I have my meditation room, which is really our den, but it's really mine. It's really mine other than my husband's, some of his luggage. And and I get out my books, and I take them. I'm a traditionalist. I'm the big book, and the AA 12 and 12, and the 24-hour-a-day book, and then my Al-Anon stuff, because I'm in that program, too, that helps me immensely in my relationships. Thank God for that program. 1 minute. And I get into gratitude. And I write a gratitude list every day, and I think there's a huge element of surrender in that, because along with gratitude, hand in hand goes humility. And I'm grateful for the very, very simple things that I have in my life. I just celebrated 34 years of abstinence, and I still write a to-do list, even though I have a really hard time following it sometimes. Thank you to you guys. It's not possible without this program, that's for sure. Number one is abstinence. That's what I write down every day. Number one, my number one objective for the day is abstinence. And I put that on my gratitude list, and then I have 10 things or more on my gratitude list, and they're the simple joys that I have in my life today, that I have a fabulous husband, he makes me laugh, I have this down there every day, I have my own business, I keep it really, really simple. It's time for me to stop. I can see like the red sign is going up. I'm done! Anyway, I hope that I did address the topic of surrender, but everything in my life is really based on surrendering to a power greater than myself and what God gives me, and I thank you for asking me to share.
Now our panel will do a Q&A with the Ask It Baskets.
Good question.
No.
And this one's for the lady who is a school teacher in D.C. I assume that's Colleen. How did you deal with cravings?
Okay, the simple answer to how I dealt with cravings was a really simple prayer. God, come between me and the food before the food comes between me and you. Sure. God, come between me and the food before the food comes between me and you. Do you hear me say it again? Okay. God, come between me and the food before the food comes between me and you. The other thing I would do is when I was afraid before a meal that I was going to binge or something like that, is I would get out a pen and a paper and I'd just start writing. I'd just vomit all over the paper. And I would start out with, "Dear God, guide my pen and truth," and just bleh. And I managed to not overeat.
Right, this next question is, how do you trust releasing the thing you love the most for the thing that will help? That's right. This next question is, how do you trust releasing the thing you love the most for the thing that will help your spiritual growth the most? And it's geared towards anyone. How do you trust releasing the thing you love the most for the thing that will help your spiritual growth the most?
Hi, Barbara, compulsive overeater. I think about this question. This applies to my relationship with my stepsons. I have two stepsons that I believe are alcoholic. They seem to act like them. I have two alcoholic stepsons. And I have a husband who wants to control them. And I have a hard time watching him with giving them money, bailing them out of jail, attorneys, stuff like that that's happened over the last 3-4 years that we've been together. And I know that, you know, looking at this question very selfishly, that my spiritual growth and also the health of our relationship is really contingent on me keeping my mouth shut when I want to state an opinion, telling him what I think of one or two, both of his sons, letting go of being judgmental, being quiet and going to my higher power and knowing that it's none of my business. It really is none of my business. And anything that I say or do to control the way that he interacts with his children will only be damaging to my relationship with him. And so the only way that I know how to do that is to turn to the ladies in the program that I can talk to about it, and then to turn to my higher power and to keep my mouth closed on this topic. So that's what I have to contribute on that question. It's really hard. That, to me, has everything to do with my spiritual growth.
All right, next question. What is the most shocking answers you got from your surrender?
Most shocking was when I surrendered, the surrender with the food happened, I found out I was a lesbian. So I don't think I need to say anything more than that.
How did you become able to feel your feelings instead of hiding, running from them?
The question, can I just say it again? How did you become able to feel your feelings instead of hiding and running from them? Practice. Being willing to do it for 20 minutes. You know, like there's that block of time between breakfast and lunch when I can't eat, so I have to do something. And breathing is always good, calling people. I'm not trying to do it by myself. That's a big one, especially if they're really overwhelming feelings, not trying to do it by myself, picking up the phone or texting somebody or whatever and being like, okay. I would do a lot of, and I still do this every once in a while, calling people because I have sort of a delayed reaction when it comes to feelings. Like I'll be feeling it like a couple days from now. So something would happen and I'd sort of have this numb or non-reaction to it. So I'd actually call people and go, just so you know, this just happened and I'm probably feeling anger or whatever it is, but I just want to say that. You know, I guess it sort of demystifies it for me.
All right, Colleen, could you please discuss how you can have a loving, positive relationship with God, how you came to love God, and how you came to believe He loves you?
Okay, so how I came to have a loving, positive relationship with God. I think in part it's something that has always been there for me. It was something that was sort of nurtured at a young age, ironically enough from my father, who would encourage me to be sort of more relaxed about it and talk to God. Like, he was the first one who ever said to me, why don't you go and talk to God like a friend? And I think, like I said before, just being willing to be open with God, like not being afraid to be angry with God, being really straight with God. And, you know, because there was stuff that came up for me, you know, and I had to ask the questions like, where was God? You know, where was God when my father was sexually abusing me? Where was God when I was left in D.C. on my butt and nowhere to turn? Where was God? And I had to ask those questions, and I had to come to the, let those answers come. But they came. And each time I grew closer. And in terms of coming to believe that He loves you, I ask God for all kinds of things. I ask God to romance me. I ask God to surprise me. I ask God to stop annoying me. I ask God to, you know, like I mentioned before, give me some kind of clue about what's going on. It's just like a constant conversation for me. And for me, I honestly believe it also has to do with a conversation with my own heart. Like it's one and the same. Like it got ingrained in me at a very early age that God is love. And though I have all kinds of mixed feelings about what love is, I had an experience as a little kid of feeling like there was something much greater than me that I was connected to, and I guess that's just sort of what. And my openness to seeing God in everything possible, so I see God all over the place. That's what I get in abstinence, is seeing God in everything, from bumper stickers to songs that come on the radio. Like, you know, this morning I was out walking and the clouds were, and the sun was coming through, and it was like the rays on this cloud, and it made me feel like dancing, and I thought, that's God, that's so cool. You know, so it's like when I seek Him, like it talks about, I see Him. So.
Colleen, again, you're popular. How did you not die or want to die before you lost your weight? How did you hold on to hope, willingness, and patience?
A lot of it for me was, a big thing for me was you guys. I didn't try to do this by myself. I'm a really good rule follower, so I did whatever my sponsor told me to do, you know. And she said, plan out your food and follow it, so I did that, you know. It's one day at a time I did it. You know, I really didn't know where I was heading when I started. I had no idea what it would mean or what it'd be like to be at a healthy body weight. Like I said, I was fat my whole life. And, So when it came to, you know, I just kept looking at, like, well, my sponsor was a 100-pounder who kept her weight off for, I think at that point it was like 15 years. And I went, well, she's done it. So obviously she knows something. So I just kind of literally, like, I was a puppet, you know, like, and people would be like, you're so-and-so's sponsor, aren't you? Because I was, you know, like, I had, you know, like, but it worked, you know. And it's I always think I'm going to die. You know, when I go for less carbs, I think, you know, just because I think it doesn't mean it's going to happen, that's for sure. You know, I think lots of things. I learned to take not too much stock, at least in my first thought about things. And I have this program constantly, people around me reminding me that things are always happening in much better and much grander ways than I ever think they could, and things always turn out. So I would just say one day at a time, one step at a time, one moment at a time, one breath at a time. I try not to take on too much at once.
Don't go anywhere. Colleen, can you discuss how you resolved old grief and how you became able to feel and resolve negative feelings?
How I resolved old grief and negative feelings. Being willing to feel them. Anger is one of my least favorite. I had to learn how to get angry. I had to learn how to punch pillows, scream in my car, leave nasty messages for program people. I'd preempt them by saying, by the way, I'm going to vomit all over your machine. And I had friends in program that I could do that with. That was really important. I did a lot of nasty letters. My favorite are the FU letters. I write them verbally to people. Resolving grief, again, it's just a willingness to go through it. You know, for today, for this moment, I'm willing. And some days it's like that. I just say, okay, say I'm willing to feel the feelings. For me, a lot of it... I don't do a lot of dancing around with my food. Like, my food is pretty set. I plan it out a week in advance, and I follow it. So whenever I'm thinking about having something else, I know there's something that I'm probably feeling or going through. So having that structure in place, in addition to my abstinence, was really helpful because it's not a negotiation for me. So I didn't have a lot of wiggle room. I had to, like, I couldn't, eating was not an option, so I had to use the tools. Had to do something else. And so just being willing to just, again, one moment at a time, you're like, okay, the next 20 minutes I'll feel as angry as I need to feel, and then maybe it'll be gone. And I've had days where, like, I feel like crap, so I write, I feel better. I feel like crap again, so I call somebody, I feel better. I feel like crap, I pray. You know what? I get to go to sleep at the end of the night. So just one moment at a time.
All right, that's all the questions. It's now time for making God boxes. Play, 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 and share like good bees. Zan the craft fairy will make an announcement. It's now time to end our workshop. Help me thank our speakers and all of you too. All right. May I have a volunteer to read the St. Francis prayer?
Thank you. Hi, I'm Monette, compulsive overeater. Prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Feel free to join me. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. St. Francis of Assisi.
May I have a volunteer to lead us out in the Serenity Prayer? Thank you.